Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And all of it is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Right now, you can get the Dollar Shave Club starter set, which includes the razor and a whole lot more for just $5, exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Much more from Dollar Shave Club a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, let's begin with our good martini. And while perhaps every provision isn't beloved in what appears to be the emerging final tax cut slash tax reform bill, it looks like we're headed in the right direction in a number of areas, and so that is our good news today. Quick recap of what seems to be emerging here from the House-Senate conference. Looks like the corporate tax rate, which right now is 35%, both the House and Senate bills had it going down to 20. They've bumped that back up to 21, with added revenue going to fund some other compromises. Right now, the top income tax rate is scheduled to drop from 39.6% to 37%. The standard deduction would also be nearly doubled to $24,000 for married couples, for those who do not itemize their deductions. The individual mandate repeal is still in here. There's still tax breaks for student loans. There's still the controversy, however, over the state and local tax deduction. They're capping that at $10,000, which is not going to make Republicans or anybody else in high tax states like New York, New Jersey, and California very happy. And so we've got some perhaps issues going along those lines. But overall, most people are getting at least a rate reduction, some help with the deductions. And the last bit is that the mortgage deduction, which right now is capped at $1 million, is going down to $750,000. So some people might not like it. Some people might love it. Overall, it looks like we're headed in the right direction.
This is most of the good stuff from the two versions of the bill we've seen. One of the aspects that struck me as a reasonable compromise was capping state and local taxes at $10,000. The Tax Foundation had this fantastic map where they just looked at it county by county, what the average state and local property tax bill was. They basically took the number of tax returns filed in a county, divided it by the total amount of state and local taxes that were paid, and, you know, surprise, surprise, the vast majority were under $10,000. And a bunch of red states, of course, it was much lower. Where you really ran into trouble were in places like New York, California, Connecticut, and New Jersey. But if you're getting to deduct $10,000, I mean, I looked up, obviously I live in Fairfax County, I believe we're at $11,000. So instead of deducting $11,000, you're going to deduct $10,000, and you have to pay that extra $1,000 no longer counts as or goes towards your taxable income level. Now, that's going to make a small difference. You should make it up on all the other changes they're making in the taxes. A lot of people said, look, you know, this is basically a subsidy for high tax states. Why are red states giving this break to blue states? We should be increasing pressure on blue states to lower state and local taxes. I think this deal comes close to doing that. I think if you find yourself with your tax bill significantly changed by this, maybe you really should be pushing your state and localities to lower your taxes. If you're paying more than $10,000 in state and local taxes, either your state has very high income taxes, your locality may have very high income taxes, or in all likelihood, you're paying a lot in property taxes. Either your house is worth a lot, good for you, that's good news for you, or your locality is just now addicted to spending and you should show up at your local city or town council meeting and give them a piece of your mind. I was going to say the individual tax rate, I think, is going to be pretty manageable. Again, I don't see corporations who are talking about overseas profits and how they didn't want to bring them back to the United States because of the high tax corporate tax rate. Well, I was going to bring it back for 20, but at 21, I'm not going to do that anymore. You know, that's still a fairly major cut in the corporate tax rate. Not as much as Trump's, you know, initial desire for a 15% tax rate, but really 21% is a dramatic move in the right direction. So a lot of good news here. People may quibble with bits and pieces over here, but look, as somebody put it, yesterday, the Republicans are on the 1 yard line. Unless they're being driven by the Cleveland Browns, they're in great shape.
Well, yeah, they've been at the 1 yard line a couple times this year. So let's hope it's first down at least.
For those with memories of the fumble for the Cleveland Browns back in the late 80s, I'm sure Hugh Hewitt is having a traumatic flashback as we speak.
I think they'd be really happy just to get back to that point if they could. Oh, man. Let's go to the bad martini now. And this doesn't have a direct political flavor to it, but it could potentially affect just about everybody and your entertainment habits. Big news in the business world today. Courtesy of CNBC here, Disney on Thursday announced a deal to acquire many parts of 21st Century Fox for $52.4 billion in stock. The company will get Fox's movie studios, networks like National Geographic and FX, Asian pay TV operator Star TV and Stakes in Sky, Endemol Shine Group, and Hulu, as well as regional sports networks. The acquisition values the combined Fox business at $29.54 per share, based on Disney's closing share price on Wednesday. The acquisition also bolsters Disney's plans to become a dominant streaming service platform, making it a bigger threat to Netflix. So, Jim, a major consolidation, a major gobble up here. Disney is already a major corporate and media behemoth, and they are only getting more massive with this deal.
There may be a political element to all this. Some folks on the right say, oh, Disney is a left-wing company. I don't know if you can necessarily give it that kind of a blanket label, but more than a few elements under the Disney umbrella have kind of started sniffing, you know, you're starting to see some political propaganda or kind of drifting to the left. More than once, you and I have talked about ESPN on this podcast and how it's getting more overtly political, more outspoken. Conservatives starting to feel like, God, you know, can I just, you know, watch the game and enjoy myself? If Bob Iger, the current CEO of Disney, and the bosses at Disney didn't like that, you can probably be rest assured that some message would have come down from on high saying, stop it, stick to sports. They haven't sent that message. You know, people can say that Disney Channel and Disney XD, Julie Gunlock had this very interesting column in the New York Post talking about the little kind of subtle allusions and messages you're getting in children's programming. For obvious reasons, people get very upset when they think about political messages in children's programming relating to transgenderism and things like that. I think what I find, you know, even if the company were not to politicize its entertainment options, having so many different entertainment products all under one company and ultimately answering to one person, it does get a little bit creepy. Greg, you've got small kids. I'm going to assume the total value of all Disney products in your house, somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000.
It seems that way most days, yes.
And before you say, oh, Greg spoils his children. No, this is just, you know, in-laws will provide them, parents, relatives, neighbors, friends. Everybody brings Disney stuff for kids because everybody likes Disney stuff for kids. A lot of it's great. Your kids get a little bit older. I have boys. They get into superheroes, and Disney owns Marvel. They get into Star Wars. Disney owns Star Wars. Disney owns the Muppets. Disney owns ABC television networks. It owns all of the various Disney channels. It's just this ever-growing entity. I believe the History Network, A&E, it's got a 30% share in Hulu. It just seems to have its fingers into everything. And at some point, you kind of are left with, okay, and now, of course, they're going to purchase 20th Century Fox, which will have a lot of entities, including the X-Men movies. So if you're into comic book movies, yes, the good news is at some point, Wolverine and Spider-Man and Captain America could all team up at some point, coming to a theater near you. And for a lot of people, they'll say, okay, I'll take over one. I'll allow one company to have this Orwellian control of everything we see if we get that awesome superhero team up. So maybe it'll be good on balance. But it just does seem like if it's not a complete monopoly, then it's something of an eerie, unnerving, near monopoly, particularly in the realm of children's entertainment. And I think that I wouldn't be surprised if in the coming years you started hearing this more arguments about this, about whether at some point Disney is getting just excessively powerful in its ability to shape the culture.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, for 2 years here, Jim, we've been kind of joking about Disney CTU and the heroes of Mickey and Goofy and Donald. Now, in this context, you can almost see them in a Godfather type role where if anybody challenges the monopolistic standpoint of Disney, you almost got Mickey in his solid oak office saying, you know, make him an offer they can't refuse, or sleeps with the fishes.
I hope your first child is a girl child. You realize, of course, that I believe, you know, 24 was done by Fox, owned by 20th Century Fox. Disney CTU can happen now, right? We this is now a possibility. All of the proper rights are now in the same house, so to speak. So Coming soon to a TV screen near you.
Now, just in case anyone was wondering, the Fox News Channel is not part of this deal. So in case you were worried that Sean Hannity might make a cameo in an upcoming Star Wars film, that's not part of this deal. At least not yet.
How many Barstein and Star Wars jokes have been told, Greg? About CPAC and everything else. So, yeah. So that has a totally, you know, by the way, you know, it's just a matter of time, right? It's at this point, we're all going to be part of the Disney universe. As somebody put it, you realize we're like all, we used to be 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon. Now we're all just 6 degrees of separation from appearing in a Marvel movie.
Well, I don't know exactly how the job breakdown will work after this buyout, but if you work for Fox, you might want to look pretty nice when Mr. Iger makes his stroll through your offices in the next few days and weeks here. So if you need to look a little sharper, check out the Dollar Shave Club. You've heard us talk about the amazing shave that we get from the Dollar Shave Club razor, especially when we use it with the Dr. Carver shave butter. Well, now we're here to tell you that membership in the club, Dollar Shave Club, has gotten even better. In fact, we're adding even more products to our daily routine.
Dollar Shave Club makes products for your hair, face, skin, shower, everything you need. They have me looking and feeling amazing, and it's all their own original stuff. They only use the finest premium ingredients, and they deliver it to you just like they do with their razors. That means no more annoying trips to the store, cruising up and down the aisles, looking at shelf upon shelf and asking, what is that and what do I do with it? Because let's face it, the clerks are not going to be able to tell you. I use Dollar Shave Club for just about everything, and they've got me covered from head to toe. And with gift memberships and e-gift cards available, Dollar Shave Club can help cover the names on your holiday shopping list as well.
We want you to love Dollar Shave Club as much as we do, so we've arranged for you to try your first month of their best razor, along with travel-sized versions of the Dr. Carver shave butter, body cleanser, and yes, even butt wipes for just $5. After that, replacement cartridges ship for just a few bucks a month. It's the Dollar Shave Club starter set. Get yours for only $5, exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Jim, let's move to our crazy martini now. And this has played out over the past couple of days. In fact, this premise for this crazy martini actually broke as news when the election returns were coming in Tuesday night in the Alabama Senate race. And obviously, we were focused on that for the entirety of the podcast yesterday. But what got released were thousands of text messages between Peter Strzok, who was also, until recently, part of Robert Mueller's prosecution special counsel team, in text with his mistress, Lisa Page. This is from the summer of 2016. This particular text we're referencing is from August 15th, just a little over a month after the FBI cleared Hillary Clinton. So this text from Peter Strzok to Lisa Page says, quote, I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's office, and that's Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe, that there's no way he, meaning Donald Trump, gets elected. But I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40, unquote. And many of these texts are filled with expletives and denunciations of Donald Trump, and as your colleague Andrew McCarthy, the former federal prosecutor, has said, none of that really ought to be that alarming because everybody's got political opinions. But this one, an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40, suggests possible intent. Jim, so what have we uncovered here and what's going to happen?
What do you mean by that term insurance policy? Like, does this mean, oh, I'm going to leave the FBI and go into private practice or something? Or do you mean, no, we can't let Donald Trump become president, so we're going to have to organize something to either make sure he doesn't become president, or if he does become president, he is hobbled. Like, say, a massive investigation and constantly leaking to the press and trying to make him look bad. You know, this is a deeply troubling and disturbing type of talk to be hearing at the highest levels of the FBI. As you mentioned, the other stuff, look, it's not – so if you've made – if you're in charge of making a big decision around Hillary Clinton, like, say, not to to recommend an indictment about all this, the classified information on her email server, man, you want to look purer than Caesar's wife. You do not want to run around saying, man, I hate Trump. Trump is so terrible, et cetera, because that will give Trump and everybody else a fairly – you know, a fairly plausible argument to say, look, maybe you genuinely didn't think that she had violated the law. Nonsense. Other words I could have said there. Or you basically, you didn't want that to be because you greatly preferred her to Donald Trump. Look, we all have blind spots, right? We all have perspectives that if Greg or I are asked to objectively assess the greatest Christmas movie of all time, we're probably going to have a difficult time coming to anything except Die Hard, despite the fact that some people might say, no, it should be Miracle on 34th Street or something like that. So if you're going to have a decision that you need the public to have great faith in, you have to really keep those partisan biases and partisan passions in check. And clearly they weren't. And when they start talking about insurance policies, now we start wondering first of all, was giving Hillary the clear an indication of an insurance policy? Because let's face it, if they had recommended indictment, it's not likely that Loretta Lynch would have done so, but it still would have been a massive issue about 2 weeks before the Democratic convention. Bernie Sanders supporters would have had a very strong argument that they cannot nominate someone who the FBI recommended indicting. You know, it would have been a giant firebomb. My theory has always been that that was James Comey attempting to split the baby and basically to, you know, criticize her, give her a public finger wagging, but not recommend charges. Now, as Michael Mukasey, the former U.S. Attorney General, said to me, the problem is that the wisdom of King Solomon is that he did not actually split the baby. And in this case, James Comey effectively did cut the baby in half and say, look, wonderful, what a wonderful, wise decision I've made. In light of this, I think it's very clear that the FBI was never going to be interested in indicting Hillary Clinton. That basically that there was at least one person on that team who was, you know, I don't know what his voting record is, but certainly had the public comments of being an impassioned Democrat. And that, every decision subsequent to that involving Donald Trump, this guy had an axe to grind. And now if Donald Trump is wise, he won't fire Robert Mueller, because now he's got a fairly strong argument that the whole Mueller team's a bunch of partisan Democrats. If you do fire Mueller, then a new special counsel, and that special counsel might not be a Democratic partisan hack who you can beat up in the court of public opinion. So that was my take on it. But my suspicion is you will hear a lot of people who were inclined to give Mueller the benefit of the doubt. He lost it with the revelation of these sorts of comments flying around on text messages by members of the FBI.
Wow. Jim, two closing notes here. You mentioned Die Hard. I don't know if you saw the clip. There was some game show where it was multiple choice, and it was which of these movies is not set at Christmas time in the 1980s. And the choices were Die Hard, Gremlins, Breakfast Club, and I believe Lethal Weapon. And the contestant said Die Hard.
What?
But not because it wasn't a Christmas movie, but because she thought it was made in the 90s.
It is timeless.
We need
it speaks to every era, every people, you know. And let's face it, is it a Christmas movie, Greg? I think yes, but also I also think it's a Hanukkah movie. It's a Kwanzaa movie. It's a really every day of the year movie. The idea is, you know, much like Christmas, you want the spirit of Die Hard to live with you all throughout the year.
And as long as we're talking about movies, Jim. I know you're very excited. Very excited. Star Wars Episode 8. And you're going. Yeah,
I am. So I have a good friend who is part of the 501st Legion. These are the folks who dress up in Star Wars costumes and go to places like children's hospitals. And everyone thinks it's sweet instead of being, oh, my God, that grown man is so weird. He dresses up in a Star Wars costume. I must say, I remember a couple of years ago when they did the screening for The Force Awakens, the first of the post-prequel non-George Lucas J.J. Abrams ones, going to the screening. It was all kinds of people dressed up in their costumes, and they brought their lightsabers and all that kind of stuff. But it was like quiet and tense, Greg, because everybody kind of knew that if The Force Awakens stunk, that would, let's be honest, in our hearts, make four straight bad Star Wars movies. Some would argue five, depending on your perspective of Return of the Jedi. And everybody would kind of have to admit that, okay, yes, Disney had spent literally $4 billion for the rights and was promising to make Star Wars movies from now until the end of time, but that really the magic was gone. It was a flash in a pan, lightning in a bottle. You just couldn't replicate it again. Most people really enjoyed The Force Awakens. So when I went to the Rogue One screening, I guess it was last year, everybody was a little more relaxed. Everybody's feeling pretty good. I'll be interested to see what the mood is for this one. It is also worth noting that in the past couple of months, Disney has announced that they're doing another trilogy after this one, plans for a Star Wars TV show separate from the cartoon show Rebels that they have going on. Greg, there will be Star Wars shows and movies coming out every day and for the rest of our lives. We will never be without Star Wars until we're utterly sick of it. And then it has to go away for a while, like Star Trek.
Well, I look forward to your review tomorrow for Episode 8, The Last Jedi, correct?
It is. And, of course, I think they just announced the title of Episode 9. It's going to be Star Wars From His Nap. It seems weird, but then you put it together, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, From His Nap. And that kind of explains the theme.
Very good. Well, enjoy the festivities and the atmosphere. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit our good friends over at Dollar Shave Club. Right now, you can get the razor and the whole Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5 exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. And tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.